Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and I thank you for listening and for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. And our thanks to Seaver Frank's Architects for their sponsorship of this show. They make things like this possible by their support and for being overall wonderful partners with Mrs. Green's world in general. They have been with us since day one. Thank you, Mike Franks. We appreciate their support. And to find out more about their work, please visit them at seaverfranks.com. Let's get ready for another important and exciting show about an organization that is making a major impact in our community, in the United States, and of course, the ripple effect is the shot heard around the world. It's the YWCA of Southern Arizona, and I just want to give a little bit of background. It was established in 1917, and I always marvel at the vision that people had. It was 5 years after Arizona gained statehood, and visionary women who had no idea what it was going to look like in 2017, people 100 years later, they were visionary women committed to establishing progressive values in what was then a very young state. From the beginning, the YWCA of Southern Arizona has been committed to promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. And I did start getting a little choked up because think about what each one of those words means now. Fast forward to 2017, 100 years later. Their mission is clear and built on the same one that those visionary women committed to 100 years ago, eliminating racism, empowering women, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. What a concept. Please join me in welcoming a woman I admire and respect beyond words, and I don't care if I embarrass her. She is leading the charge for the YWCA and for our community in these very challenging times for many of us. She has gained the attention, the admiration, and the respect of thousands of people in our community, in Arizona, and in our country. Her name is Kelly Fryer. She is the executive director of the YWCA. She is my friend, and I am so excited because I finally get you for 60 minutes all by myself. Nobody can interrupt us. Nobody can knock on the door, and I cannot wait to hear in more detail some of the amazing things that you're doing. And I'm going to call it the Y Dub, so I feel like I'm part of the family. I want to be part of the clan, Kelly. And we're going to end up with calls to action that are so critical right now. And we might even end up with some rays of hope from your perspective. I'm counting on you for doing that. And some days I'm grasping for straws. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you, Mrs. Green. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to be on your show. You are a force of nature. And I just want to say thank you for doing all the work that you do to save the planet.
It matters so much. And I think I told you before, I'm going to the rainforest. I haven't been talking about it much, but after 10 years, I'm getting to go back to the deep in the rainforest and do some more deeper spiritual work. And who knows what I'm going to come out with next time. The first time it was the radio show. So Mr. Green is saying, could you call me from the airport first and give me a heads up about what we might be looking at for the next 10 years? So I promised my team, and I got permission from my team, that I could say that you are kick ass. It matters to me. You are a disruptor for good and all that that implies. And when I heard you speak a couple of months ago, I want people to get to know a little bit more about you, because I was totally enthralled with your story about what you do when you see a fire. I, of course, run, but that is not what Kelly Fryer does. So can you tell us that story and weave in a bit of your background and get you to the YWCA? We've got an hour.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, Gina. I'll just say it takes one to know one.
I love that you're saying that. It inspires me.
You know, I got my start around the issues of justice, you know, in my educational and my professional career. And in some ways, even though my career itself has taken a lot of different directions, It's always had that same theme. So when I went to college 4 million years ago, or last century, when I went to college last century.
I love saying that. Oh, yeah, you weren't born yet. That's one of my favorite things. Oh, yeah, you weren't born yet.
I really, you know, I thought I would go into law. I was pre-law, and I thought I would go into politics. I'd had an experience as a very, very young child of having the opportunity to meet Robert Kennedy when he was running for president. And it was, you know, just one of those experiences that just kind of gets imprinted on your soul. And so, inspired by that example, that was kind of the path I was on. And for a variety of reasons, you know, I ended up taking a little bit different path. You know, I grew up kind of in the, what I would call the tail end of Vatican II. And I can remember the nuns, you know, playing guitar mass.
What a revolution for the Catholic Church.
Oh, it was. And, you know, and of course, Martin Luther King Jr., you know, wasn't related to Vatican II, but was related to this idea that to be a person of faith was to be committed to justice, social justice, economic justice, racial justice. And so as I, you know, kind of graduated from college and kicked around for a couple of years, I ended up in seminary and became a Lutheran pastor. And it was really, you know, it was my kind of, you know, vision for my life that I could marry those two things that were really important to me at that point, which was a kind of a deep faith life and a commitment to justice. And I was pretty good at it.
I am not surprised at all.
I was pretty good at it. I you know, when I started in seminary, and maybe this is part of that, you know, running to the fire thing, I had never met a woman minister before. This was back in the day, you know, and this was a pretty new thing. And I belonged to a denomination that where the people in the congregation would have to vote you in as their pastor.
Oh my gosh.
So I got sent, when I graduated from seminary, I got sent to this little church in you know, open country, north central Illinois. German farmers. My nearest neighbors had 500 hogs, and that was more people than lived in the nearest town.
Wow.
It was really the middle of nowhere. And these, you know, every single person on the search committee and on the church council, they were all men. They didn't allow women to serve in leadership. And here they are interviewing this young, you know, young, fresh-faced
woman
who grew up in the city,
right?
You know, you know, that congregation ended up voting me in. I became their pastor. And it was in the fastest declining county in the state of Illinois, and we became one of the fastest growing churches in that synod. So I was pretty good at it. Now I think there was a shock factor. I think there are a lot of people just
like a big curiosity.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, who's that? There's a woman talking at the pulpit over there. Right.
Look, that is a two-headed horse. We have to go see that.
And then they liked it.
Right. So, anyways, I guess to kind of bring it up to today, there was a period of time, you know, mid-80s, when a lot of, especially Christian churches, started leaning, I'm not going to say conservative, I'm not going to say to the right, I'm going to say, because I don't think those words are very helpful, but they started leaning mean, you know? Instead of breaking down walls between people, and God, they started building walls between people and God, building walls between different groups of people.
And what an insight, though, to be on the inside and to start feeling that and probably somewhat feeling like it was closing in on you.
It's been a very difficult journey. And it really got to the point, both because of where my own faith life was, and also because of where my personal life was sort of moving.
Right.
you know, I I fell in love with a very beautiful woman.
Who is drop-dead gorgeous. I think I have a crush on her, too, so tell Tana it's good. It's all good.
And, you know, as those things were kind of all, you know, both my kind of spiritual life, my personal life, all kind of coming together, it just really became impossible for me to stay within the institution anymore. And so, you know, in some ways, it was a commitment to justice that kind of drove me into the church. And in some ways, it was that same thing that drove me out. So, but you know, that being said, there are so many things about that world and life that really matter. And one of them is community.
Yes.
And so being here at the YWCA in Southern Arizona right now, it is just it's not a religious organization. It hasn't been for 75 years. But it's this beautiful combination of a commitment to service to people in the community, a commitment to doing justice in the world, and this commitment to building community, to being in community together. And so it's kind of a great place for me to be.
And to use your voice and to be touching the lives of so many people. So one of the major areas of focus, I mean, it's your mission, is that I love it, and I can say it and I can remember it, empowering women and ending racism. So 100 years later, with those basic tenets and that basic vision, what is happening now? And how would you weave that answer? I would love you to talk about the op-ed that you had in the paper recently, because it wasn't a surprise to you. Charlottesville was not a surprise to you. And I read that op-ed, and there is this whole discussion about white privilege, which actually offended me when I first heard about it. It's like, oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Well, when you learn about white privileges, it's not something you choose. You're born white, and therefore you have white privilege. So talk a little bit about that, of empowering women and ending racism. You know, the crystallization of this interview was supposed to happen in July, and you were sick, and then I went away, and on, but it was on purpose. Because now the mission to me is even more illuminated, important, and powerful. So talk about what's happening now. You're in it every day.
Right. Well, you know, the kind of the months, maybe the year leading up to this last presidential election, I think for so many people in this country, and I'm going to say for me too, you know, the events and the tone and the vitriol and the kind of hatred that we see, the anti-immigrant, the rhetoric around people of color, the misogynist, language and rhetoric, and it's been so disturbing for so many people. And I am blessed to work with, boy, you want to talk about kick-ass.
We can name a lot
right,
of them. Yeah.
To work with some women and people on my team at the YW who are just so woke.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
the language. It's a really diverse team, people of all different kinds, and just so aware. And I've been learning so much from them. And one of the things that they've been teaching me is, you know, look, Kelly, these issues are not new. You know, this is not new. Whatever country you thought you were living in,
you weren't.
Never existed. It was a myth.
Yeah.
It was a story that you people made up to make yourselves feel better about the kinds of things that have actually happened in this country since the beginning. That has been, you know, for somebody who is a lover of American history and a lover of American politics.
And a lover of people of all kinds. Enter your purview that, oh my gosh, this is real.
Right, right. You know, somebody who grew up in a time in this country when it seemed like there was real progress being made.
Right. We fought those battles. We made change. We passed the Civil Rights Act.
Right, right, right. And I think thought we did way more than we actually did.
We did.
So it has been it's just been a kind of a spirit and soul wrenching time. for me. And I think partly because I can relate to that feeling of just deep disappointment. It's like having, you know, like in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy pulls the curtain back and you see this shriveled up little guy that isn't a wizard at all. That's kind of how I feel about my country right now. Like the curtain has been pulled back. It's not like this stuff is new. This stuff has always been there. And, you know, what's happened around this election, since the election and in Charlottesville, has just pulled the curtain back for us so we can really see what's behind there.
And it's just not pretty. I could not have articulated it better than that, because we walk around here in our house saying, how can this be?
Mm-hmm.
They're coming out at night. Where were these people? Mm-hmm. And you're right. And what I would like to reflect on is the people at the YW, it's not said with judgment and a harshness. Mm-mm. It's said with, look, I can be honest with you. Here's what it was like living on my street and going to my school and what my kids are up against. And the issues, there are so many, it's not even funny that it goes on and on and on. Let's go back a little bit just to reflect on this, because I think it's so important. And I joked with you off air, it was kind of joking, kind of not, that when you go to the YWCA, the physical building of the YWCA, mm-hmm. people want to be there. I feel like it's a bunker. And when I go in there, I feel joy, I feel community, I feel laughter. Now they have lemon bars, so I feel fed in the cafe. But I mean, it's every step, even that as a joke, it's, well, we want to feed people too. And you have the juices and, you know, all of those wonderful people. Community. Mm-hmm. Do you think people are starving for it? I go in and I love it. And I go to people's desks and I see who's in their office. And I think people are starving for community, and that's what the place from which you come there. Agreed?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, this is maybe going to sound a little bit, I don't know, goofy or something, but there is this sense that, I mean, first of all, around all of these issues, right? And just exactly what you described, people telling their story. And, you know, people of color, people in marginalized communities who are saying, this is what it's always been like for us. And there is, you know, there's not necessarily judgment, but there is a lot of pain. And I think there's a lot of frustration and some anger. But there is also, at least at the YW and the community that we're trying to cultivate there, all of it is within the context of deep love. Right? It's love for each other.
So true.
Yeah. It's love for our community. It's love for this crazy state we live in. It's love for this country. It's love for the potential that we have, for the vision that we have, for the possibilities that exist. And as much as possible, when we do our work together at the YW, we try to live in that envisioned future. I mean, we try to live in that space and to just kind of envision that this is the reality that we are bringing into, that we're giving birth to together, a reality where there is love for each other, there is respect for each other, where people have just basic human rights, you know, and we are all in this together on a planet that is hurtling towards a future that does not look at all pretty. But together, if we come together, we can fix these things that are broken, and we can kind of live into that vision that we have of what we can be as Americans, as Arizonans, as inhabitants of this planet. So I think that's what you feel. That's kind of obtuse, right?
That is what I feel. And it's not spoken word.
No.
It's feeling. You walk in and there's a feeling, there's something there that's magic. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about being good stewards of the planet, our team has very intentionally decided to expand the content of our shows and the people that we have on, because as with your journey, my journey was of discovering things backwards. And what I mean is, I went to the rainforest, I saw the devastation and destruction, so I want to help be a preserver of the planet. And then as I started interviewing more and more people, the phrases came up like, if it's not about the money, it's about the money. and how marginalized communities are the first ones impacted by climate change.
That's
so
right.
So social justice is now, it's always been a core value of the team that we have, but it's now going to be the focus of more of our show topics, because we can never have a sustainable planet if we don't have a socially just one.
Right.
It doesn't matter if we preserve the rainforest if we do not have social justice protecting the indigenous rights of those people that didn't have a deed. Show me the deed to your land in the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. We lived here forever. That's our deed. So it was a very good fit for me to begin partnering with the YWCA every chance I get because of social justice and being inspired by, you know, the work you do every day. It's important.
You know, as we were getting ready for our 100th anniversary this year, our board and staff worked together for a whole year, all through 2016, to put together a kind of a vision for our next century.
And our next 100 years.
Our next 100 years.
I'm thinking about that too. It's like, yeah, I won't be here for all of it, but I want to be here for as much of it as
right,
I can.
Right, exactly. So, so we started out with the question, what is, you know, as we look back 100 years ago at the all women who started the YW in Southern Arizona, and we look at everything that they have accomplished in these last 100 years, you know, the things that they worked on, you know, we ask the question, did they know what we would be thankful for as we looked back 100 years?
Right.
Like, did they know that the big issues of their time would be workers' justice and, you know, gender equality and civil rights? And one of our board members in a retreat that we held said, how about if we ask this, 100 years from now, when people look at us today and they look back at us, what will they be thankful for? And will we have tackled what they are able to see from their perspective? Were we able to tackle the biggest challenge of our generation? And what is that challenge? And, oh my gosh, did that lead to some conversation? And the way we ended up saying it is, everything that we do as the YW in here in Southern Arizona has to be about addressing the single biggest challenge of our generation, and that is challenging the systems, the political and economic and social systems of our time that threaten our basic human rights and the survival of our planet.
Wow.
That's the challenge that drives us. And so, you know, out of that, we created a strategic map with some strategic directions. And everything that we're doing is being organized around those directions to meet that challenge. But I think in that sentence, what you just said, basic human rights and a commitment to saving the planet, these things cannot be separated from each other.
And there, you know, I think it was my daughter Katie, who did a lot of in our writing and guided us on some visioning for our next 10 years. I mean, we're babies, really, and we have to, like, grow up really fast. But she talked about the faceless villain of climate change. And when you dig down deeper into that, it is what I said. The oil, the trains that carry the oil and the dangerous chemicals, where do they go? They put them in marginalized
communities.
That's
community. Right. Yep.
What about the pipeline? Mm-hmm. Where did that go?
Right.
Oh, the governor didn't want anywhere near him. And, you know, we don't want to go off on that trajectory. But it is. And in the Inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power, you saw the streets of Miami flooding. And I have this course with, you know, our friend Molly and Diana Liverman mm-hmm. and a bunch of people, and we're all saying, well, it's not going to hurt the rich people.
That's
Let's
right.
be honest, because they're just going to move their condos and their million-dollar apartments just up a little bit.
Right.
But when you're in the Maldives or you're in some of the areas that are already underwater, you just don't change your zip code. So it's those marginalized people that I feel connected to, but it's think globally, act locally, and the YWCA is attacking things right here on the ground mm-hmm. and how that climate change is going to impact us. So let's switch for a minute, because I want to really make sure that with you and I have the paperwork, so I want to stay focused. But let's talk a little bit about the national scene and then bring it back to really things of hope that you're doing, because I really do want you to weigh in a little bit on it. Like, let's talk about the press, because you are interviewed by the press, you're covered in the press, people read it. Are they helping? Are they covering what needs to be helped? I mean, it's so insulting to me to hear people put the journalists down, journalists who put their lives on the line, who care deeply about honesty and integrity, not all of them, but to be, have them bash the way they are for being liars. What kind of job do you think that they're doing, and how can we help them do it better?
Oh, that's a big one. I know. That is a big one.
And it's only an hour show. When I was talking to Mike Kelly earlier, I said, you know, we probably should have made it 2 hours.
You know, it seems to me that more than anything else, the press in this country is under-resourced. That's the biggest
issue.
That's a great answer. The folks who own newspapers and own television stations, it's all about, you know, making a profit rather than creating the news. And so every newsroom in this country has had cutbacks in reporters and photographers and
cameraman,
so on.
Everything. Crew doesn't come out.
That's the person
reporting doesn't. If they're lucky, having someone carry the camera.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, the folks that I know personally in the media, especially here in Arizona, these are people who they want to do a good job. You know, they got into the business because they're journalists.
Lupita.
Yeah.
Mario.
Yeah.
Perfect example. Yeah. Yep. She's down in the trenches making social change happen.
But it's tough, you know, when an editor is making a decision about what story do we cover and where do we send out a camera crew and do we even have a camera crew?
Right.
So, I think I give kudos to folks in the media today that are trying to work under those circumstances and trying to be very selective about what they cover and what stories they really can deploy resources to investigate. But I'm heartened, frankly, by there's a lot of garbage, obviously, out on the internet. And so figuring out how to filter through all of that to get good news is hard, can be hard. But I appreciate, Facebook Live. You know, last night here in Arizona, we had our first visit from President Trump since he was elected here in our state. And there were huge protests in Phoenix. There was rally and march here in Tucson, and the media, under-resourced, couldn't be everywhere or even many places at all. But everybody who was protesting out there was, you know, had goosebumps.
You're right.
Had
that's
Facebook
the
Live.
Press too.
That's the citizen press.
Yes.
And so. But yeah, that's a tough question. But you know, the attack on the free press, right? I think that's what is behind that. Who benefits when you say things that make people in the country not trust the media? Who's benefiting from that? Somebody who's doing things that they don't want the media to find out about.
Yes, exactly. And to me, the underlying fear that I have about that is when you listen to who's owning those stations and who's buying up networks all over
That's
the
right.
country and then feeding and filtering that news. And it really is scary because one of our basic tenets is freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And it's not so free. So you trust your local newscaster, but when you find out he's got or she's got to cover that story, I think it just, your point is just be aware, do your homework, and find sources that you know
that
you can trust and you
right.
don't have to fact check.
Right.
Don Lemon, man, I love that guy. I'm addicted to Don Lemon. So maybe I'll send him a copy of the podcast. And there's a part of me that says, the less you have to do with the press, maybe the happier and quality of life you can have and get involved more in action. I mean, there's a part of me that says, I do press-free days because it doesn't help me, and sometimes it really shuts me down. So I think there's that caution we could give to people. Okay, I have to do this. If you don't want to answer it, it's not Stump Kelly Fryer, but just weigh in on the President of the United States and the current climate around the country. Do you want to... just, you know, is there any good that can come from it? What are the positives, if there are any? What's your take?
You know, as easy as it would be to just start kind of bashing, I want to say this. I think that our president is a symptom of what's wrong with this country and is not what's wrong with the country. And, you know, there are a lot of folks who, you know, think we'd be better off if there was an impeachment or a resignation, or how did this happen and how can we change it? And all I want to say to that is that could be a revolving door, that office. But until we address the issues that are really creating trouble in this country, frankly, in some ways, it doesn't matter who the president is. Not that he can't do a lot of damage, and his policies are doing a lot of damage to the environment and workers' rights and immigrants and right down the line.
Prisoners.
Right down the line. But every single one of the policies that are being implemented right now from the from this White House, they were tested out first here in the state of Arizona.
Oh my gosh.
And so... and we've been living with that for at least a decade here in this
state.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. It's really true. It's oppressive.
It is oppressive.
I mean, it really is the direction, even charter schools. I mean, the whole thing, the breakdown of the education system and really malicious intent and openness, our whole policy with guns. I mean, it goes on and on. Even in a state where we have Gabby Giffords and Ron Barber, it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
We have, you know, the most heinous laws and policies in this country were tested out here first in Arizona. We're like a testing ground. So SB 1070, you know, which was an anti-immigrant law that allowed law enforcement to stop anybody who looked like an immigrant. I'm using air quotes there that your listeners can't see, but
I know I want to have visuals sometimes. You know?
In other words, anybody who looks kind of brown could be stopped for whatever reason and asked to produce their citizenship papers or their birth certificate or whatever, passport. And
the English only in schools.
English
that
only in schools.
That was one I got on. I mean, in the research, the compelling research.
Taking away the right of the local school systems here to teach about Mexican-American history. I mean...
Boggles the mind.
It boggles the mind. But SB 1070 in particular became a test. And as soon as it was passed and signed into law by the government, by the governor, it became law in various forms in states all across the country. And of course, now we have a president who's trying to implement those same kinds of laws federally. So I know it's hard not to be focused on what's happening in the White House right now. It's hard not to be distracted by that.
But that's a good word. It's a distraction.
And you know, we're working really hard at the YW here in Arizona to get people kind of focused on what's happening in the state. To look at what's happening in the governor's office, in our state legislature, because frankly, we have control over that. I don't know if you know this, but 56% of registered voters in the state of Arizona did not cast a ballot in the last election. We have a democracy problem. I mean, yes, we have a president problem, but more than that, we have a democracy problem. So how do we begin reclaiming democracy? And how do we start here in the state of Arizona and in the Southwest to reclaim democracy, to reengage voters, to help people see the power that they have, that their voice has, and to use that power in a way that makes a positive change in the state. And honestly, given the place that Arizona, the role that Arizona plays in the country right now, we're kind of a tipping point state. If we can figure out how to create good, positive democratic change in Arizona, that can have an impact across the whole country.
And what happens to me is I get lost in the bubble because I am surrounded by people like Leanne Hernandez, and the list goes on and on. So I work with them, Local First, our sustainable living forum. So then I start to think a little bit, well, that's the world, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it isn't yet.
Right.
It isn't
right
yet. And we have to really keep that consciousness about that. And it made me think about, I was on a statewide television show in the 80s, Kelly, and it was about passing the incarceration of juveniles and trying them as adults. And I was coached. I had people meeting at my office in the dark, like at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. So everybody didn't know who was supporting it. And it was a fear-based initiative. And everybody was saying, keep the gang members out of your house. These kids need to be locked up. And my point on TV was, no matter what you do, you can't legislate that a 13-year-old is an adult. He might commit an adult crime, but you can't make him an adult. And guess what? It passed. And you're right. It was the domino effect.
Right.
And it was proven that those kids who are locked up with adults at 13, what do you think their bright future is all about? You know what I mean? So it's just, it's one of those self-feeding things. Okay, let's... We can spend the next 25 minutes talking about good news, because I want you to go into detail. Let's talk about STAT. Mm. You have exciting things to share. So we got over some of the ugliness and the sadness and the reality. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about STAT. What is it? It's so exciting. We're going to be there. Go away. Go, Kelly.
So so this year, earlier this year in 2017, the YWCA's in Arizona, there's the YWCA in Southern Arizona, that's us, and the YWCA in Maricopa County. We joined together to launch the Stand Together Arizona Training and Advocacy Center. We call it STAT for short, and well, because we think this should not wait one minute
STAT.
Longer.
We needed STAT. We need it was right like, now. I loved it. Standing Together.
Stand Together Arizona.
Stand Together Arizona.
Training and Advocacy Center.
Oh, my God.
And STAT has a couple of different primary purposes. We, you know, we're not creating like a new organization, right? We exist to provide support to grassroots activists on the ground. You know, like for example, the women's marches across the state of Arizona to provide support to activists like that to pull together. The key influencers like Mrs. Green and nonprofit organizations and research centers and grass tops groups to pull together a group of key influencers in the state to author an agenda, a legislative agenda for the state of Arizona. One of the things that we have noticed and that we have gotten ourselves caught up in over the past few years is always being on the defensive. It feels like one terrible bill after another comes out of our state, you know, whether it's anti-immigrant or it's anti-education or it's
anti-children,
you know, anti-children,
that's right. Healthy eating. I mean, we got a really great record. My daughter's going to listen to this show and say, Mom, when you come to LA, please don't mention you're from Arizona, because she says that to me. And it's like,
true.
It is true.
It's true.
People look at you like, oh, okay.
So we're always on the defensive trying to kind of link arms and stop the terrible things from happening.
The reaction.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so STAT is about flipping that narrative and saying, okay, wait a minute. We might all care about different parts. You know, you care about the environment. That's kind of your number one thing. Somebody else might care about immigration or criminal justice.
Right.
But
find your passion.
But if we all got together in the same room and we started talking about the kind of Arizona that we want to live in, we would have pretty much the same vision.
It would be a really big center of the Venn diagram.
It would.
Really big. There'd
yeah.
be a little margin and then all of this stuff in the middle.
Yes.
I could not agree with you more.
So so we started thinking, all right, you know, what? So part of STAT is to pull that kind of group together to author an agenda and move that agenda forward in the state of Arizona. And we do, you know, community education, voter education, leadership training for civic engagement. And I'm super, super excited. We have a fantastic team, core team that we've put together for STAT. And we're launching our first major initiative on September 29th.
Which is the day after this show launches. The timing is divine. Thank you, goddesses. It's like, yeah.
I know. It's so weird how it happened.
It is. It really is. All on perfect timing.
So on September 29th at 10 o'clock at our at the main YW campus in Tucson, we are holding a press conference and doing a statewide kickoff campaign for what we're calling Operation Haboob.
I freaking love it. Freaking love it. Tell us, why did you pick that name?
Well, you know, folks who don't live in Arizona might not know what a haboob is.
It's in, you know what? It's in the climate, the Inconvenience sequel.
Yes.
There's a haboob
in
that
really?
Movie. Yes, because it is a climate aberration, okay?
It is an aberration, and it can be very destructive. But we're going to form a haboob of people in the state of Arizona. So for those of you,
because it's an unstoppable force.
So your listeners, you know, might not know that what a haboob is a million particles of dust that together form this huge wall of dust, and it is an unstoppable force. I mean, when a haboob comes your way, you just have to stop and wait for it to pass because there's nothing you can do about it.
It's like a volcanic eruption without the volcano. I mean, you just can't, the dust, you can't see,
cars can't
drive, there are terrible accidents. I mean, it's scary.
So that's the destructive part.
Yes. The good part is the other wall's coming.
That's right. So Operation Haboob really is, if you can just envision, thousands and thousands of people across the state of Arizona coming together to really claim our power. And to, I'm going to say, take Arizona by storm.
Oh, yes.
So
I love it.
We have a couple of goals. We have four phases to Operation Haboob. Phase one kicks off on September 29th. And for the first couple of months of Operation Haboob, we're going to be crowdsourcing a people's powered agenda for the state of Arizona. We're going to be in touch with hundreds and thousands of Arizonans across the state, both in one-on-one small group gatherings, in haboob huddles that happen across the state, and online, using online tools to crowdsource what are the issues that the people in this state really care about. We're going to get as much data as we possibly can. We're working with a great consulting company out of Austin, Texas, that has done this kind of work before. And by the end of January of 2018, we will have an authored, articulated people's platform for the state of Arizona that covers all the issues that we care about. Phase two of Operation Haboob is to really get people in the state focused on these issues, you know, to kind of redirect our energy and attention. You know, we get so distracted by all this wackiness that's happening in the political universe around us right now. Get people focused on these issues, and we'll be working with experts like you. I hope that you'll help us put materials
together. My head is going, we need to do a series of 30-minute podcasts that can be shared everywhere with more explanation for what it is. And that way, what I love about that is anybody with a smartphone or a computer can access this free.
They don't have
to be able to read even.
That's right.
So to me, that's something that we can talk about and I will look for sponsorship for.
So
crowd partners.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have, you know, experts from in environmental issues, immigration issues, criminal justice reform, education. And we'll support them. That's what STAT has committed to doing, to get this material produced that really provides good voter education. And it'll be available online. And let's say, you know, you could have a little haboob huddle with your friends.
Right.
Bring all your friends over.
Right.
Have some wine. Have some cheese. And
any haboob huddle sounds good to me. I love it. I love,
you know,
alliteration.
Listen to the podcast or watch the video. We'll have study guides. You can be sort of like the...
So organic. Grassroots.
Exactly.
Oh,
very grassroots.
Yeah.
So that's phase two. Get people focused on the issues and do voter education. Phase three is really focused on the 2018 elections here in the state of Arizona.
I want to scream. I want to do this. Is everybody hearing that? Wake up, people. We need to ring the bell. I rarely do that. It sounds so hokey, but come on. Wake up. The bell is ringing.
That's exactly right. So phase three for the, you know, just really focused on that election time, we're going to help people connect the dots between the issues that we've all said we care about and the people who are running for statewide office and for elected office here in Arizona, so that they can really be voting not based on party, not based on, you know, who's the cutest or who has the most, you know, the most the best TV commercials or whatever, but really informed, educated, engaged voters who are voting for people who they believe will uphold their values. And then
I love it.
Phase 4 of Operation Haboob, hold these people accountable.
Their feet to the fire.
Hold their feet to the fire. Whoever it is, friend or foe, you know, whoever it is happens to be elected, we're going to work together to hold them accountable, to do what the people of this state want them to do. I think we're tired of the fighting. We're tired of the negativity. And oh my gosh, we're so tired of having outside money and dark money and, you know, people like the Koch brothers and Alec come in and control the people who are running our government. The people, the government belongs to the people. We're going to reclaim democracy. We're going to push forward a people's agenda for the state of Arizona. We're going to take the state by storm.
And in the most beautiful way, and I have to say this, and for all our listeners, Kelly got here. We went over the show notes. We had like 5 minutes. I'm ready. And she tells me about Operation Haboob and STAT. And I have to share this with the listeners because it is such a beautiful visual. These phases, gathering the clouds is phase 1. I love it. Somebody with an artistic heart and soul touched me with this one. The phase 2 is building the storm, which is where you're getting people to wake up. You're getting people to engage, to really feel their power. And then phase 3 is taking Arizona by storm. So all I can think about, I'm, of course, thinking about the monsoons, because you see the gathering and then the storm is building. Then you take Arizona by storm, and here's the end. The pièce de résistance, the desert blooms. Yeah. Everybody, every desert dweller I know is now talking about how green the desert is.
Right.
And it's joyful because of the rain. So you've got this metaphor for life, mm-hmm. and how all of that needs to happen. And as you were talking, I was thinking about people in the United States, we take so much for granted when you talk about privilege. And what would happen if they tried to take our voting rights away? These people would come out of the woodwork. I always vote. My kids, on the day of their 18th birthday, they all texted me and said, "Mama, I voted," because that's the citizens that we wanted to raise. So it's just, this is about as exciting and as hopeful and as powerful as anything that comes along. So I don't know if you want to comment on that, because I thought of another question I really want to ask you as you were describing it.
You know, I would just say this, that, you know, this is very much tied to that question that our board and staff asked last year. 100 years from now, when people look back at the things that we're doing today, what do we want them to say about us?
Operation Haboob.
We want them to say, this is how the YDUB has articulated. We want them to look back at us and say, because of what those people back then did, today in the state of Arizona, everybody thrives.
Everybody thrives. And, you know, one of my favorite movies, and I've talked to you about this before, and I still hope to bring it to the YW as a fundraiser, and it might be perfect for part of this, is Poverty Inc. And the line in that that crystallized for me was, the only way to end poverty is to get people out of it. And when I saw that movie, to me, the YW is the quintessence of that. It is, we don't want to give stuff out. We want, and I don't want to be cliche about, you know, give people a hands up instead of a handout. I believe that. But the way to end poverty is to give people skills and to help them get financially savvy, to help them learn how to read. So to me, this is the whole enchilada, as we might say here in Southern Arizona. And Kelly, the question I wanted to ask you is, for you personally, is there somewhere where we really need to start that is the squeakiest wheel, the most painful sore, the oozing blister? Let's be really graphic. Is there one? Because I know I have one, and I want you to tell me yours, and then I'll tell you mine. Is there one that really we need as a country to look at first?
One issue, you mean?
One issue.
Well, I'm just going to take a wild guess about what your issue is, Mrs. Green.
It might surprise you what my issue is.
Really? Tell
remember,
me.
I'll tell you. To me, it's I've only cried on the air 3 times in 10 years. It's about getting all the people out of prison that don't belong there. Mm. We have so many people whose lives are literally rotting in prison, and their crime was being born with a skin color. Mm-hmm. And I have enough friends who have experienced it. And to me, that is the issue that everything else can wait almost. You know, we can't stop all the presses, but all of the people that are literally rotting in cells, being raped, being beaten, being violated, they need our help and they need it fast. And, you know, when I almost lost it, I'm going to go off grid here for a minute, when our president said one nice word about Joe Arpaio. Mm-hmm. He is disgusting. I feel angry about him. He got great joy in humiliating people, yep. which is not restorative justice. So to me, it is the climate, yes, and the Mother Earth, mm-hmm. but we have to get those people out, because how can they care about the climate when they're rotting in a jail cell for something they didn't do?
Well, and you know,
how's that for a rant?
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's all related, right? We treat people like they're just throwaway.
Disposable.
You know, like disposable people.
In America.
Right. Whether it's because of their class, their race, you know, and increasingly because of their gender identity, like it's throwaway. But don't you think that's connected to the way that we look at the planet?
Yes.
You know, we treat the planet like it's disposable.
Totally. You're right. You're getting it. My team's going to be so proud saying, yeah, Kelly brought it back for you, Gina. It's really because if we can't respect Mother Earth, and treat her any way we want, pollute the rivers, make the air filthy. Now they're talking about going after our national parks, right. which makes them right. so stupid because it's such a moneymaker. People come from all over the world to go and see our national parks and increase our revenue streams.
Well, and I'm going to bring it back to Operation Haboob. You're right about those things, the national monuments, for example. But who's leading the charge on taking our national parks? And
the oil companies?
Our statewide Arizona officials,
oh.
right? So if we can change the laws, and if we have to, the leaders of this state, in order to do the will of the people of Arizona, those things wouldn't be happening.
You're right.
But, you know, they're being paid. They're being paid by dark money that's coming from
big
corporations.
Evil money.
That's
yes,
right.
You're absolutely and positively
right. It's time
right.
to take Arizona by storm.
I'm ready. And then we'll get to see the desert bloom. I want
that's
my
right.
kids to be proud that they were born here. And, you know, like I said, I hang around with all the cool people in the sense of they're believing what I believe in, and you live in this bubble, and then you go outside and you think, holy smokes, this is awful. Let's try to talk about, in the very few minutes that we have left, we have less than 10 minutes, which I told you was going to happen, some of the specific programs, because I do want to highlight them. I mean, you are about activism, you have leaderships program, mm-hmm. you're small business.
Right.
So talk about, highlight some of them in these next you know, minutes that we have left, because it's a happening place every day.
It is. So on our strategic map, we have three strategic directions, and each of them is being stewarded by one of our action centers. Our number one, our strategic direction is equipping women to take charge, of their own lives, of their own careers, and as leaders in our community. That's being stewarded by our Women's Center for Economic Opportunity, the WCEO. We help about, oh my gosh, the numbers always float around in my head. But
and they grow and they change, so it's fine.
They
but
do,
it's
that's true.
Just
but around 1,000 women a year are...
Which is a staggering number.
It is staggering. Go through a program to help them get a job, go back to school, learn leadership skills to advance in their career or to become leaders in their community. We help around 1,000 women a year get clothes to go.
I was just going to say
get a
that.
Job interview.
They can get dressed because you need that,
right?
And you give them confidence.
Confidence,
that's
tools,
everything.
We call them wraparound programs that really look at an individual woman and ask, how can we help you become the absolute best person you can be to live out to have a dream for your life and to live it out. That's the Women's Center for Economic Opportunity. The second strategic direction we have is building a local economy that works for everybody. And we've given stewardship of that strategic direction to our Micro Business Advancement Center. I don't see a lot of words, but MAC is housed on our South Tucson campus. South Tucson is a wonderful community rich with culture and history and generational relationship, but it's also the most economically challenged part of our community.
The forgotten mile. People can write a book about it.
Yeah.
The forgotten square mile.
Square mile. It's a square mile. 55% of the people who live in South Tucson live below the federal poverty line. So we've located MAC in South Tucson, and that's where we are housing our Women's Business Center, where last year we helped about 1,000 entrepreneurs get the training they need, the help they need, the capital they need to start or grow a small business. Most of our entrepreneurs are women. About half speak Spanish as a preferred language. Many of them are coming out of economic poverty. But all of them are they're the hardest working, scrappiest people that you've ever met.
And strongest.
Strongest. Our entrepreneurs last year generated $3.8 million in gross sales revenue.
Oh my God.
So we're really focused on helping local grassroots entrepreneurs start and grow businesses. But we're also experimenting with other kinds of things that will drive economic development. So, for example, on our South Tucson campus, we're building the first kitchen business incubator in Southern Arizona. That kitchen business incubator will not only provide commercially licensed kitchen space for food entrepreneurs in town, but it will also give them business training, business coaching. It'll help them connect with capital so that they can get the money that they need to start or grow their business. So we're experimenting with those kinds of programs in South Tucson to make that local economy really work for everybody. And then our third strategic direction is to build a statewide movement that drives a legislative agenda to make Arizona a place where everybody can thrive. And we've given that strategic direction to Stuart. So those are the three action centers, and that's kind of a summary of what we do, but
we can do this. It makes me feel like we can do this.
We
can do this. And I just want to pause for a minute and just reflect on the importance of what you said. It can get glossed over, but having done home-based services with at-risk children and families for many years, the importance of putting the center where you did in South Tucson, instead of making a woman who has no money and doesn't speak English take three buses to go somewhere on the east side to get her training, it doesn't work. It's a recipe for failure and disaster and puts more barriers. And in spite of that, lots of women succeed because they'll do whatever it takes.
Right.
So locating it there is a very intentional and strategic, move on your part. Major kudos for that. And you do something that's huge and big and wonderful for the community when you have your leadership conference and bring in big names that bring the audience to tears or to their knees or raise their consciousness. Talk about that. Huge.
This year we're having our 29th annual Women's Leadership Conference. It's being It's going to be held out at Star Pass Marriott yep. Star Pass this year, and we are focused, as we are celebrating our 100th anniversary as an organization, on highlighting new millennium leadership. So our three keynote speakers are all millennials. They're amazing. One of our keynote speakers started a social enterprise called Giving Keys, which is creating jobs and raising money for people who live in without homes. A young woman who is a co-founder of Low Libros, which are bilingual books for kids, and a young woman who she was the first Indigenous woman to become Mrs. Universe. She's from Canada, and she's been using her platform as Mrs. Universe to draw attention to the missing thousands of missing Indigenous women in Canada who just go missing off of the reservations. All of our workshops are focused on issues like, how do I know if I'm in the right career? And what if I want to make a career change? How do I start a business that's going to change the world? So that's happening in November of 2018, and tickets are available online at our website.
And we need to, is November of 2017?
It is November of 2017.
Okay, I can't wait to see what 18 is. I mean, I'm like, I already got my ticket, so I hope we didn't gloss over that one. And everybody, I knew this, and my gut was right. We have 30 seconds. YWCA.org is where you need to go.
YWCA Tucson.org.
YWCA Tucson. Kelly Fryer, thanks for showing up in my life, for showing up in Tucson, and for your place on the planet. We need you. Make it a great green, intentionally live day, everyone. Thanks for being a part of my world.